Okay, so you are on the record.
Great. Thanks, everybody, for joining us for this subcommittee discussion of incentives and subsidies. I see Neil Sandridge, I'm one of the co-chairs, and I see Isaac in the room, our other co-chair. Is there, I'm missing Michael Yaffe at this point. Isaac, do we have a Michael Baker?
So I think Malia from Michael Baker is going to facilitate this meeting. Michael is on vacation, so I'm going to hand it over to Malia.
Hi, Malia. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. Thank you. I'm here to help facilitate and however is helpful for you. So just feel free to let me know.
Okay, great. And then I don't see necessarily some of the other, we've got some of the other subcommittee members. I don't know if you want on the record listing of who I see attending.
Hi, this is Jed Miller. I'm just sitting in for educational purposes. Thanks.
Perfect. I throw the thank you. I have a question that should have been working now.
John Sims is here as well.
Okay. Anybody else in the room?
I'm here for listening and support purposes.
We appreciate that.
I'm here sitting in for Representative Rauscher, just listening in.
Okay.
Hi, Neil. Karen Bell here from AEA.
Great.
I just wanted to let you know I'm going to have to hop off the call at like 2 p.m.
Perfect.
Thank you.
That's when we'll start assigning AEA tasks.
Everything, I suppose.
Perfect.
I'm Neil Sandridge, first presenter of the show.
Thank you.
Albert Bradley, just listening in.
Great. Thanks, Albert. Anybody else? I saw Duff Mitchell was on for a minute.
No. This is Katie Conway listening in for the Denali Commission.
Wonderful. Thanks. All right. Well, let's go ahead and get started. I don't see any other subcommittee members on right now. Isaac, maybe I'll give you an opportunity to say a few words, any thoughts or feedback from discussion so far today and sense of what you want to try to achieve in the next hour and a half or so?
The only thing I would share that would be maybe news to you, Nils, is I was sat in on the Rail Belt subcommittee, and they had some good ideas for incentives, in particular related to diversifying kind of the generation mix on the Rail Belt. I took copious notes and emailed those to you so you have them, but I can also go through them if that's helpful and just kind of let you know. I thought some of them were very complementary to stuff that we're doing or some of the suggestions that we had, but there's also some things on there that are new. So process-wise, I can either read through those, or if you want to read through them and introduce them to the group, you can do either way.
Yeah, I took a quick look. My general takeaway was that they want a fund for all the different things that they identified. Is that about right?
is that fair, Jen? I think there's different kinds of funds, and so that I think they're looking at the renewable energy fund, thinking about that, how that may be amplified to include kind of pre-development expenses for IPPs or developers to, have a grant that covers some of those due diligence, which can be expensive. So not a new fund, but it's just kind of expanding the use of the renewable energy fund. And I think with the power project fund, looking at how that could be used potentially, you know, modified so it can be used for new generation projects. And they were just noting that that fund is great because it's patient capital, which is very much needed. Jen had mentioned that in her project in Willow, I think they, you know, secured a term of 20-some years, which is a good match for the kind of asset life. They also talk about interconnection, thinking about, and that would be a new fund, to your point, Nils, an interconnection cost fund for new generation projects where you're essentially just trying to bring down the cost on interconnection for new projects, or finding low sources of debt. Yeah, do you want to?
And I think, you know, while we're brainstorming many ideas, we threw out a lot of ideas. We're ambitious, but I think where our recommendations consolidated around was the, augmentation of the REF fund and power project fund to promote, or incentivize, new generation projects. And then actually, if I could pass it off to John, we've started to talk about, you know, carrot versus stick on, looking at diversification. And one way is, you know, get to this diversification by this date or else. And we talked about, oh, man, is that a distraction for resources having to debate penalties and this and that, and those penalties ultimately get passed on to the rate payer. And so could there alternatively be an incentive where if you get to certain diversification levels, then there's funding for transmission or other combined assets that also help lower rates. And so John's taken the action to take a pass at that, and I'll let him say more.
Yeah, sure. So just kind of leveraging ideas of the past and things that I personally know work. SINGSA, which is the Cook Inlet natural gas storage facility in Kenai, it is a regulated asset, and one of the benefits of the Cook Inlet Recovery Act that happened a few years ago was legislation that allowed for a tax credit once the project was complete. And that is important. So we still did all the work, did all the research, all the modeling, ultimately got this project to FIG, completed it, and then this tax credit, because we are a regulated entity, went to the benefit solely of the consumers and to the ratepayers. And so massive benefits for a project that was essential. And as we look at what was one of our long-term goals, which is significant diversification of energy supply that is affordable, local, and reliable, projects that go towards that mission and actually make it across to development, hopefully could have the benefit of some sort of credit that goes to help the affordable aspect of that, which is reducing the cost to the end user. So that's the high-level concept, and we're going to be working on that action item and hopefully presenting that in the near future.
Yeah, so just wanted to kind of do a crosswalk between their subcommittee, what we're working on. I think we'll, as a group, decide, you know, where these things end up. Are they in the generation, or are they actually statewide incentives that we should also have in our subcommittee list of actions? But, my job is done there in terms of connecting to the two subcommittees. I also, to your first question, Niels, I think working through some of the newer actions that we may have generated last meeting or that are coming in now, a little bit of attention to those today might be an agenda item, and then also just starting to assign folks to be writing the one-pagers or the full strategy docs. I think that their group went ahead and did that today, and so it seems like we should follow suit and have need this meeting with some assignments for who's going to do what before next week or by next week.
Yeah. The tax credit discussion sounds very similar to the IPP discussion we had with Steve both yesterday morning as it relates to CCD in terms of how to maximize some of the benefits from that program too. So that could have broader applicability. Great. Well, I can't share. I was going to pull up our slides Isaac, that we had developed with our strategies. But I can't.
Hi, this is Malia with Michael Baker. I have the action tracker sheet open on my screen, if that would be helpful to share, or I can drop my email in the chat, and you'd be welcome to email me your slides. I don't know if I can make you a presenter, though.
Yeah, they're in the task force SharePoint, but it wouldn't let me access the PowerPoint there. If you can grab that. And
Bill, you're a presenter now, so you should, maybe you have to refresh or something. You should be able to share your screen. And while you're trying to do that, oh my gosh, the fellow from Michael Baker, is it John, who was here in our room earlier? Mark, gosh, thank you for moving. He mentioned that he had updated the slide deck and put it in the SharePoint, so that may be what you're looking at there, Nils.
Yeah, I couldn't access the SharePoint one, but this is the older one, so I don't have an updated version. Okay. Malia, if you get a chance to try to grab that, I'm happy to switch with you. But for the benefit maybe of everybody, I mean, just so you know what the incentives and subsidies working group has done, subcommittee has done, very similar to Word documents being developed elsewhere. We have a number of strategies and actions that follow that format that Michael Baker had earlier introduced. I think we ended up with 7 strategies. Let me just run through them really quickly so you get some sense of what we're talking about. Strengthening state-federal coordination and investments, decreasing barriers to private sector investments, improving the economics of project development, increased state programmatic investments, responding to evolving energy business models that take into account clean energy and private investments, maintain residential subsidy focused on equity while reducing need across communities, leverage those subsidies to offset energy costs of other users, decreasing community transactional costs, and evaluating implementing state policy tax and other incentives. So that is kind of the structure that we've developed so far. Again, like I said, Emily, one of the reasons to not have you pull up the energy, the action worksheet is I think we have like 30 actions, so it's maybe easier to view how these have been consolidated under each of these strategies. Is that any questions about what that looks like, or Malia, should we switch?
Yeah, I was able to access the PowerPoint that Mark put on the SharePoint, and I can share my screen really quick.
Perfect.
All right, and let me know if that needs to be larger or which. It's a little bit clunky on my end, but we should be able to still see it.
Yeah, if you want to go to that, yeah. Then. So it sounds like for other working groups, they started filling in some of the challenge or background, justification, timeline. Is that, Isaac, is that what you want us to do, or should we focus on prioritization?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Well, so important clarification, just I think that would help. So what we did in our committee was we actually assigned the action items for them to take them back and on their own time would develop the language, and then we're going to follow up with the rest of the committee at a later date to go through that developed work. I think you get really bogged down in wordsmithing with the whole group, so it's best to let somebody have first go at it and then submit it for the group's benefit to discuss at a later date.
Okay.
But in terms, in terms of semantics, I think what you're calling an action would be our top. So we have 7 slides here, 7 or 8 strategies. You were assigning those to 8 people. You weren't assigning, because underneath that we have actions where we have some 30 actions. You were assigning those
I think it's specific actions.
Yes.
Budget.
Well, and so we started out with a large list of actions and dwindled them down to what we thought were the essential actions. And I would guess at this point maybe we have 10 to 12 or something like that.
Okay.
And so we're drafting, it's a one-pager, and Michael Baker has the format template, but it gives the context and the background and the recommendation. And so we have a one-pager Word document that is built out more than a slide. And then we're meeting on Monday to go through those, like John said, have somebody else kind of craft the bulk of it, and then we'll do my edits as a group. And then we're going to roll those up into some executive summaries that are more at the strategy or theme level around, like, transmission, generation, storage. But, I mean, that's just an example of how we're doing it. Doesn't, you know.
One observation I might make is that, for whatever reason, the Railbell subcommittee seems to have more folks in the room than in our subcommittee. Well, I won't take offense to that. I do think that just in terms of, you know, how we divide and conquer here, Mills, it may make sense for us, and just also knowing kind of where your skill set and other folks on the team are, it may make sense for us to, you know, assign those eight strategies. One per person. I could see a couple that would naturally gravitate towards myself, or a couple to Dove, or, you know, a few to you. That may make more sense for our group. You just don't have the horsepower that the Railbell committee, subcommittee can have. In terms of other people power.
I apologize. On 2.2, it says encourage municipal, I'm sorry. You have, there was one about federal. Did I miss it?
The top big number one was 1.3, establish federal.
Could you go to the previous slide just real quick? Maybe that was the one I was.
I think you're driving, Nils. Can you go to?
I'm no longer driving.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Melia, go ahead.
Oh, looks like Jennifer took it over, but I will share my screen. I have it up. It's like musical PowerPoints up here.
I'm sorry.
All right. Should be able to see that now.
Yeah, you had 1.2, establish renewable energy and transmission land use designation on federal lands. Why not state lands, too? It's easier to do them on state lands than federal lands.
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's what I wanted
I will weigh in on there. And, Curtis, you're absolutely right. Where I wrote that up and I helped write that up is because the federal lands are so restrictive and they kind of block us out, but there could be another angle on this for state lands as well, with DNRs and the parks and everything else. So I think it can be very easily modified to all of the above. The issue is we have a little bit more control underneath the governor and AEA to direct other commissioners within the legal framework of how we establish those land uses, where we have to negotiate more on a federal side with federal land managers. But
the only reason I say that is because there's talk of legislation putting state lands in a renewable land bank. And so that would kind of open that door to kind of support that idea, where nothing wrong with DNR. We like DNR. But it kind of forces the issue more that if it's renewable, there's a different criteria and a faster process in which to put those state lands to use.
Well, and this is yeah. John Sims. I would think that we would want to stay as a task force more focused on what specifically we can do in a legislative session, and that the governor can help drive and the legislature based on our recommendations. And I think if we start diving into federal changes or you know, anything along those lines, that makes it a lot more challenging. So,
just a comment there. I don't know if they're focused more state-driven. Well, our job was to make energy more affordable. Let me just say, so I took back the slides, and the other ones were older, and the newer version already does the state and federal lands land use designation. So, this is the most updated version.
Okay.
It sounds like it's great to have more folks in the room to talk through these actions. Isaac maybe the best use is to kind of review those with this larger group and see if there's any further input, and we can assign drafting based on that.
That would be great. Yeah, good idea.
Cool. Any other questions or comments about the proposed actions or the effort to facilitate state-federal coordination investment?
This is Curtis on 1.3. I would put state in there, state and federal, because the state very well might invest in a transmission line fund, and the feds might not.
And I think we added a sub bullet here, an Alaska Energy Transition Fund, but I think we can clean that up and bring state or federal, whoever wants to do this fund in whatever combination, let's make that happen.
And Neil Stelfier, I have my hand raised up. I'd like to address on both of these. There is already action sheets, I think, for both of these in the blocks. It's the one-page, two-page narrative. And it does include, state aspects that, but it's a working draft. So I want to, I like a little more cleaner on the title. I'm more task and purpose. I don't like ensure. I like don't establish. I like stronger words, will create or something that's more, I'm just saying, I'm more task and purpose oriented. So regardless of the title, if you look back into some of the things that we're doing, the narratives, like what has happened in other committees, I think they can be fleshed out to some of the comments. And I really want to key on what Curtis is saying, because I think we need to include state and federal. And to John's point, 2 days from now, Senator Sullivan and Murkowski are dropping in a hydropower bill that will bring $500 million, not all that to Alaska, but I do think we need to look bigger than just what state is. We have some powerful congressional delegation, and if we do it rightly, and we make the right recommendations, there is federal monies that we can ask and apply for.
Thanks, Bob. Any other feedback on these actions? I should say, too, that in terms of these actions, there's a lot of crossover between any of the action pools and the strategy. So if you don't see something, it's likely that it might be in a different under a different strategy category. Isaac, any of the things that you heard earlier in the Rail Belt subcommittee that you want to bring into, you want to flag specifically for this?
I don't think so, no.
Curtis, anything more you would, anything jumped out at you?
No, no.
Great. Two is really focused on decreasing barriers to private sector investments, and this might be some of what folks were talking about a little bit earlier.
Is there any way to make your slide bigger or maybe close the navigation window on the left to give it some more room? It's quite small in the room here.
Yeah. Or is your TV too big or small?
If
your TV is too small. Is that any better?
That is better, yeah. And I don't know if you need the navigation stuff on your left, but that would give some more real estate, too.
Yeah.
You can close that.
How about that?
That's better. Thanks.
Okay. Look, I'm learning on the fly. Lots of things here could be done to decrease barriers to private sector development. And it's different. I think there's other ones where it's provide more money for those. But anything that stands out to folks in the room?
Yeah, when you say fully implement CPACE, we have a CPACE law. It's based on Texas. People that have played with it and tried to implement it, at least in Juneau or whatever, find it's not Alaska friendly, even though it's passed by the legislature. So fully implementing something is different than maybe retooling it. And then the other aspect is several states have an R-PACE program that was discussed, and this really doesn't capture the R-PACE, which is residential property assessed clean energy. So I'm just thinking of making it more bold and enlarging it.
Yeah. And I did get comments on our face, but I think what we mean by fully implement is, you know, see it expand beyond kind of current communities. But it's good to know that retooling might be part of the discussion.
Can you walk me through
2.3?
I'm sorry, this is John Sims. Would you mind walking through 2.3?
Thanks, John. I think this, Isaac, can you take this? I think we heard from private sector folks that having these things in place would be helpful.
Yeah, so there was good conversation in the Rail Belt subcommittee about RPS. I remember our language in this group, which may have an updated version, being RPS or clean energy standard, followed by renewable energy credit, which is, I think that's what you're asking, John, but the REC is part and parcel of an RPS and or CES. And I think the thinking behind this is that it provides a signal to, you know, potential developers of large scale renewable projects that this is, the direction the state is headed in and provides a little bit of certainty. It was interesting hearing, you know, Tony and others, push back on RPS specifically, and maybe what we want to consider. But I think the general, you know, what our group is generally trying to do is send out a signal to folks who would want to build, projects in Alaska that this is a place that is welcoming to that, that we are moving in that direction. To me, that's almost the most powerful part of an RPS, is that it's sending a signal. It's less about the penalties or the sticks or the, it's more of just like, just, you know, this is the way that works.
Yeah, the one thing was is when this was originally done, the Rail Belt did it because the RPS was specific to the Rail Belt. So the Rail Belt committee took that head on. And so we have an area now, we have two committees talking about the same issue, coming up with different conclusions as far as the clean energy standard versus as an RPS. And I just know Rail Belt was tasked with it. So I don't know if we want to just kind of park that for a larger discussion, because again, clean energy standard allows for additional, you know, hydro, nuclear, and natural gas, which is not an RPS standard by definition. Now, that could be exempt, you know, they could change that definition, but by definition, those three technologies are exempted.
Well, and from what I heard Isaac just say, I think both committees share the same goal.
Yeah.
So it's just the wording around that goal, and whether we keep it here as an action item or not, I think that our committee would have a strong issue with the RPS as far as either way.
And one thing that we brought up, or I brought up earlier, especially on the RPS and the stick approach, is the utilities have already, with AEA, are putting $12.5 million a year to improve transmission lines and battery systems in South Central. They've already bonded $166 million, but it's like we're not going to take exact commitments from utilities and put it over into the good column. We're just going to find a bigger stick to hit them up for additional funding. And we want to kind of be careful because the utilities definitely are moving with AEA to improve so we can get more renewables off the peninsula. And we can't expand Bradley, we can't do solar, we can't do wind, we can't do a lot unless we improve those transmission lines. And they themselves, without any push, is put a third of the money already up in the game.
I was going to offer up as the co-chair for the Rail Belt. You know, we could take the primary lead on in this topic area and then sync back up with the incentives subcommittee, just so that we're, because I think this is, as far as sending a market signal, and our long-term goal is about significant diversification. So like John said, I think we have the same end game, the same goal. And anyways, we would offer up to kind of take the lead, but then sync back up with this committee so that we're aligned.
One more question to simplify me, hopefully.
Yeah.
So as part of the incentives and subsidies committee, it could it just simply be the establishment of a renewable energy credit, do they have to be connected? I don't understand.
In a way, I'm not as familiar with the CES bill that I drafted, but I know in the RPS bill, I mean, it is part of the bill. It's in the bill. The other thing, to your point, Jen, I think I'd like to hear from Duff and Mills also, but that doesn't seem like a reasonable perspective to have the RailBell subcommittee take point on this and just come back to us afterwards and see what parts belong under our subcommittee. That seems reasonable, but I'd love to hear from Duff and Mills. But really quickly, Curtis, can you, just for my own education, I know in the current RPS bill, one of the exceptions or allowances to prevent the utility being penalized is if there is a lack of transmission in place, next to natural disaster, next war, and mm-hmm. four or five other things. That's one of the kind of get out of jail free cards. I'm not sure I understand your comment earlier, but are those two things relevant
I think there is a point, I understand the point about transmission, but the utilities and AEA are taking a proactive step to improve those transmission lines and introduce the battery systems, not only in South Central, but down in Kenai and in Fairbanks. And so they already have money set aside. The money's in the bank, literally. And so they're working towards those goals. But if the RPS then puts additional penalties on stuff, it comes over what comes first, the chicken or the egg. You know, you want renewables, but you need transmission. So if utilities and AEA work on transmission, then we're going to penalize them because they don't have the renewables. But if you're working on renewables, but you don't, you have to work on transmission. So it's just which one comes first, and the utilities and AEA took the approach of, let's work on transmissions, and obviously battery storage is part of that because of Bradley, which is a huge, which needs the battery for oscillation issues, but then it could be used for wind and solar and another needs. So it's kind of like the chicken and the egg, I guess,
So essentially the utilities are already spending their money on transmission and...
For the goal of introducing more renewables.
Yeah. Okay, and then to Jen's suggestion that we kind of put 2.3, let the RailBell subcommittee take point on that one. What do you think, Mills or Duff? Any thoughts on that? Or on any part of this?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I thought our job, and Curtis, mentioned that we're doing a little bit of duplicative work between subcommittees, and I think that's going to happen throughout, where we had a broad mandate to look at incentives and subsidies that we could identify that lower the cost of energy in Alaska. We did that. It's going to apply to rural and coastal and rail belt. And I guess the question I would have is if these actions are from a broad perspective available, potential actions for the group to consider, is there... And there's strong feelings, it sounds like, at the rail belt level about an RPS. Is that a check on the recommendations that we're making more broadly? And then how does that affect, and how should we be thinking about that relative to deployment efforts in other regions of the state? So, I don't know. I think it's good to know that we're headed in the same direction. It sounds like there's some issues with RPS implementation that have affected the rail belt negatively or could or something that maybe can be solved for. I would hate to lose any of these options if we can make them work as tools in the toolbox.
And I think Curtis had a thought.
Yeah, with the current legislation of the RPS, it only affects the rail belt. And so that's why it was assigned to the rail belt. The current legislation doesn't affect another part of the state. And so that's why the rail belt had that look on it, on the RPS / clean energy issue, is it just affected that one segment. And it would offset kind of what they're doing with what they're doing, is, you know, as far as the other considerations they had. But I think we're in the right direction. So I think if the rail belt can Tony and Jen continue to look at that with the subcommittee, I think we'll probably come up with the right answer on that issue that affects the rail belt only.
Yeah. And so, and our job wasn't to look at existing or potential legislation, right? So we're not considering this in light of what's currently on the table. We're thinking about what are the tools available to Alaska to lower the cost of energy. So if you can thread that needle somehow, then it sounds like there's work the Rail Belt Committee can do.
I would like to weigh in here. I think it's appropriate to go to the Rail Belt. The legislation, the bulk of where the renewable portfolio standard emphasis is going to be on the Rail Belt. I think it's wise, though, to understand that whatever precedent is set with the Rail Belt is going to affect rural and coastal. And so I would just ask the representatives of the Rail Belt that if they grab this and basically tag their it, they're going to run with the ball, that they also look at the broader ramifications so it's not just Rail Belt-centric, but that it is Rail Belt-centric today, but future Alaska. And so there's that on-ramp there. And I think that they have the expertise and they have the horsepower on that particular subcommittee to deal with it. So that's my two cents on that, Niels and Isaac, if that means anything.
Okay, and Jen had a comment too.
Hi, Jen Miller. And I think we can do the heavy lift on this topic within the Rail Belt subcommittee. And I don't think you need to take it out. I think it's a theme, you know, at a macro level within policy for the state. It's worth capturing it in this summary, but maybe we do the bulk work and feedback what the recommendation is, and that way we're synced up.
Yep. That sounds good. I like Doug's kind of implication, transition, like how do we tie all these things together between the different regions that are similarly looking at the actions.
Thank you. Hey, if I could just go back to 2.1 for a second. I'm talking to local energy groups here in the Southeast, and you know, our pace, I just want to use the words our pace, because right now, I just want to add, right now we have legislation in Alaska for C-PACE. We have no our pace program. And an our pace program could really reduce the cost of power and the cost of heating for people in our state if we look at implementing our pace, I don't use PACER, I use the our pace, but resilience is fine on the our PACER program. So I just wanted to add that in there if we can.
Yeah. I think the only reason we hadn't before, Duff, is because we've gotten feedback that we, you know, haven't put in the effort so far on C-PACE or haven't seen yet the results that we wanted to, and kind of prioritize that versus adding this a new effort. But
I can appreciate that, but the governor, I just go back to military. The mission was lower the cost of power, and I know that, you know, a moonshot is difficult. You got to calculate all the math before you even launch the rocket, and we could get bogged down in the implementation of one or the other, but I do think it's a healthy program for moving our state forward.
Great. Any other thoughts on here that sticks out? Do these actions relate back to the strategy decreasing barriers to private sector investments? Okay.
The 2.5, to conduct pre-development permitting, you're suggesting the state takes that over on those projects?
Potentially, yeah, and or working with local organizations who are well suited to do that. But, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, essentially, instead of defaulting to a reactive stance where we have projects that are proposed and then, you know, they get hung up in NEPA permitting issues, creating zones in the state that are...
Let's fill that out.
I think we do. I mean, almost to your that previous slide when we talk about land use, clean energy transition on land use designation on state lands, it's probably along those lines that within those zones then that some of this pre-development activity could occur.
I know that we're being recorded. I want to be cautious of what I say, but we're handing this also off to the legislature. And so sometimes it being spelled out might be better than assuming they understand what we mean.
I'm a dreamer of being more specific and more tactical on the wording rather than nuance, because you can read it three different ways. And I think in the previous slide, we talked about state streamlining policies. Well, state streamlining policy directly impact this particular strategy. So there's overlapping between the strategies as well.
Yeah. Here in the room, Jen had a comment, and then John in the room.
Hi, this is Jen. I just wanted to, actually we talked earlier about augmenting the Power Project Loan Fund, and so that is patient and low interest debt for new generation projects, and then also augmenting the Renewable Energy Fund to help matching, so there's still skin in the game, but matching for those pre-development or development costs to help reduce the risk that new companies take on new generation projects as a way to get more projects in the door. And so I just wanted to highlight the parallels, again, between the two subcommittees and similar recommendations, but those are two specific funds. Curtis had a good point. Those are funds that already exist and have administrative staff to work, and so we're just going to augment those to expand their capability, but it's something very tangible that the legislature can reference and knows about to expand that functionality.
So I'm wondering if in this instance, since that is much more of a statewide program, if that doesn't come back to this group as kind of primary to heavy lifting on it.
And you guys could steal our write-up. And I think some of this is a good point. You know, we're going to write it up and review it as a subcommittee, but then we could just hand it over in this cross-referencing between the two subcommittees and how it helps both. But happy to share that.
So that does go under this 2.4 power, is that where you want power project fund? Is that what you're thinking?
2.4, 2.5 actually.
2.5.
Yeah.
Curtis, this is John Sims. Curtis made me think of something that we actually discussed kind of quite heavily in our committee meetings regarding the legislature and what's soon to be hopefully formal recommendations coming from the task force. And so as we work on these incentives and subsidies and concepts and ideas, if there are any that we place as a higher priority over others, going back to specific language, make sure that's captured. I envisioned that I was terrified of, on the power generation side, that somebody would take a snapshot and say this was a recommendation from the task force, that they then, start communicating to everybody. Well, that recommendation is largely, required or need something else to happen before that recommendation would be the case. So just as we draft this, important consideration that individuals can take a soundbite or a one-liner of this recommendation and say this is from the task force and it may be conditioned upon other things. So just general comment.
Okay. So something from that, we need to rework 2.5, be more specific, and bring in some of the other suggestions related to Power Project Fund and other tools that the state has available. Is that right?
Yeah, even I think what Jen is offering is they may have done some work already, and if you just feed that to us, and we can probably incorporate their work to the time saving.
Yeah, this is Jen, absolutely. So 2.4 to me ties into the Power Project Loan Fund. And then 2.5 is a slight change where rather than the state going in and doing pre-development, we're talking about augmenting the Renewable Energy Fund to help share the cost of project development with private partners so that there's some skin in the game as that project moves forward. But, yeah, so those two things. So Renewable Energy Fund for 2.5 and Power Project Fund for 2.4.
I think we've got REF elsewhere, so, but we can figure out 2.5 as we go. And I haven't locked in REF. I've got your list. Number three, we're talking about improving the economics of project development. This is in some ways similar to, you will realize, decreasing barriers, but really more focused on other ways to do so. Okay, I appreciate the participation in the subcommittee of the Rail Belt team. I know, well, I'll just recognize, I mean, I thought that Clay was on too, if Clay, if you've got any thoughts, I'm not paying attention so much.
We were just too lazy to change rooms, and so apologies and thanks for putting up with us.
I actually think more interaction between the subcommittees could be really useful because I would claim this is not unique to two subcommittees. There's a lot of overlap. And wait, you said that? I thought you meant this.
Right.
And I would just add, in our coastal committee this morning, we went through and created a column where we have overlap with everyone else. So I think there's going to be more cross-pollination henceforward than, you know, there's so much overlap on so many of these that every committee's working on that we're going to have to just bridge these gaps and pollinations and work together.
Yeah. Okay. Any questions about this one? Okay, I'm going to move on. Increasing state programmatic investment. So this is really more about where there are state programs, are there, could we augment them in different ways to make sure that we're complementing this overall mission of affordability? So streamlining regulatory and permitting action, M&O needs, weatherization, energy efficiency, those kinds of programs within state agencies or others, staff resources, workforce development, technical assistance, procurement policies, and so on.
Curtis had a comment.
Yeah, just and it's really on the 3.2. Something just to kind of keep in the back of everybody's mind is the deferred maintenance on powerhouses in rural Alaska is over $300 million, and bulk fuel is over $800 million. So just those two pieces alone is $1.1 billion. And I would say that's on the light side with inflation. And it's just something to kind of keep in mind as we go. AEA has done what we call an inventory and assessment of all the powerhouses and 3D modeling, and we have everything with powerhouses. We're in the process and working with the Coast Guard to do that for all the bulk fuel. But there's 197 rural villages and there's 400 fuel tanks, so we're into 25 before it's done. We're knocking out over 100 a year. But just keep the $1.1 billion, just because I think it's important for the state and the legislature to understand the obligation that's out there.
Yeah. I added in $1.1 billion, but I don't really think I was going to leave it there. It's just,
yeah.
It's good to know that that scale is kind of what we're talking about. I think, you know, we can get, I think the point of having it in here is just to make sure we're not losing sight of that broader need that might be out there.
Yeah. Andrew, did you have a comment?
Yeah, on the 3.2, you know, status quo can't continue. You know, we're going to have that 10 or 100 to service every utility that is out there. And I had a question on the energy zones. Is an energy zone a village by itself? No, that's my question. If that is the definition that this committee has been working on under, something that can continue. Yeah. I've made that comment before. So we've got to start thinking outside the box to come up with real solutions that can work, you know. With 3.2, we're so far behind for probably never catch up, even with the augmented funding put in. So, we need a different solution.
Yeah, and I wonder, to Andrew's comments, if 3.2, the word support is quite weak and ambiguous there, and if we don't change that to something like, find a new approach or rethink our approach, but, you know.
The United States, the Red Belt, the Southeast, which are the things, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Proven technology, the proven system.
Yeah.
So when you look at all Alaska, there are no bridges. Only a few bridges that are close together are connected. Very few of them. Part of the 180 or so of most of Alaska. So bridges are the solution.
Yeah, Andrew, grids will fall under non-programmatic investments.
Yeah.
Great.
Comments. Yeah.
Just a general comment, though, that the challenge I have with the grids concept is, you know, that connects everything, there's no doubt about it. But then you're left with the same issue of maintenance, which is more important on a grid than it is on the other systems. So you have to have the ability to pay for the ongoing maintenance. Otherwise, you'll just be in the same. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so I don't think we could recommend, at least I would never recommend that we're going to put a grid connecting all of rural Alaska.
Why?
Without.
The railroad was telling me like massive amounts of funding.
Mm-hmm.
With a little
knot
for Alaska with a PCE program.
Yeah. And, but the important...
Let's reverse the roles.
Yeah, so I'll finish my statement.
Kind of
fit
for the railroad and massive funding for rural Alaska.
So finishing my statement.
Catch up to the railroad.
Yeah, Andrew. So finish my statement. I would never recommend connecting the grid without also having a solution for the maintenance and operation of those grids.
Yeah, that's a given.
So, well, but it hasn't been a given yet. And so we have a lot of proposals to do that.
Could happen first before you start talking about having personnel to maintain and everything, you know. I talked about the Sakuma Carbon Power Project we were working on for several years. We got to the first step. We could begin it.
Mm-hmm.
But then because of the state laws regarding the state parks, we could not even proceed.
Right. So let's talk about the way it came to.
All of that was incorporated in.
Yeah, let's talk about the way to maintain it.
It could have made a grid with Bethel and 14 surrounding villages, all interconnected.
And I'm just suggesting that we also come up with a way to maintain and operate it. Because investing in infrastructure is...
To make it happen first.
Yeah.
Thanks guys for this conversation. I'm going to keep moving. We're going to run out of time for this stuff.
Hey, I want to go back to one slide before, though, if I can. But I don't want to interrupt this conversation.
Here, can we just pause for a minute? I think we're having multiple conversations. Great. And good comments, Andrew and John. And I know Jeff has been waiting to jump in there as well.
If we can go back to, I think, slide 3, we jumped over the one slide real quick.
Slide which one?
The one that had, wildfires. Establish a liability trust. I've talked to people in the legislature, you know, that this is only half of the solution. The other half of the solution, the first meeting that I ever met Governor Dunleavy when he was a senator was on open access. And my suggestion was, you've got to have, on 4.1, that you have open access kind of tied to the 4.1. So it's kind of like, I know utilities aren't really for open access, but in order to get smaller ones, and I think that I just wanted to put out there that I think there's a tie-in between 4.1 and 4.2. So you get something and you give something. And that was my only point between those two. It's like, I'm not trying to force anybody into anything. I'm trying to make this a win-win, because I think we got to, just like what we heard in the last discussion between John and Andrew, we got to find win-wins.
Yeah, I think that's the reason we broke that out, is to just make sure that, you know, we've kind of noted that they are potentially separate actions that can get combined if and as necessary. But we don't want to lose one if the other one doesn't move. So I think right now we're keeping it available.
I just know politically they almost have to be combined, because that's why the legislation didn't go any further the last time around.
How actions are implemented, I think, is maybe a different question. But for right now, we've kind of split out, like, here's the actions that could potentially occur.
Yeah, that's fine. I just wanted to put it on the public record for the other people discussing it, other than the Student Senators and Subsidies Committee.
Perfect. Alright, we're making progress, folks. Thanks for sticking with us. We've got a few more. We've got energy business models that are kind of future facing, and a number of different new ways to think about how we structure those business models. Any questions or comments about Isaac, anything you would add to what we're looking at here?
Yeah, I mean, this is very much in the future column, but I think this is just things that have worked in other places that get to that kind of virtual power plant, or, you know, leveraging demand-side resources and creating a market for all the gadgets that people may have in their homes and different emerging technologies. That's what all this is focused around. So yeah, nothing to add here. Just when we were pushing ourselves to think kind of a little bit over the horizon on this one.
Okay.
Yeah, I would just like to ask, we got the Rail Belt Committee on here. Is there a Rail Belt utility doing any on-bill financing currently? Is this something that's discussed?
This is John Sims. I know it's discussed frequently. Whether or not they actually have it, I don't know. Tony mentioned in our committee that they are looking at time of use rates with their board, and that's in active discussions. So I think a lot of this, I won't say a lot, some of this work is ongoing and being explored. And Tony went so far to say it will be filed soon. So there's an incentive for the electrics to be definitely taking up that effort specifically.
Thank you. Thanks, sir.
So these aren't finalized yet, but just placeholders for now. Maybe they get combined. Hopefully we want to, a lot of the other strategies are investment or incentive focused, so we wanted to make sure we were doing our due diligence on subsidies. So these both touch on PTE, so we came to them late. So we're still working through this. I think the idea is, and Andrew, you brought this up this morning, but really we want to get to a place where communities have affordable energy in such a way that PTE isn't needed anymore. So we're talking here about what's a strategy for that transition, and investments that could be made along the way to lowering those costs, offsetting PTE, and doing other types of, you know, doing something different, potentially. Closer to stamp frames have come up in other sessions, and so we're thinking along those lines, but these aren't finalized yet. And I'll just say before we jump in on this, that we're kind of thinking about not just that, but, you know, what else is out there. We talked about community facilities allocation and making sure that we're effectively using that. We talked about commercial application and the ability to lower community costs overall. debt we talked about, and then the ability for community-based IPPs to sell power to utilities for the full PCE reimbursement, basically, and kind of plow that back into what residents experience. So that's the work that we've done so far on subsidies. Any questions or comments on that? Isaac, did I get that? I know we haven't built in any of the comments from yesterday's meeting, but.
Yeah, I'm curious to hear from folks in the room or other folks in these two slides. But yeah, I think you covered what we have up there.
Nils, can you go to the postage stamp rate? Because I know there's been previous discussions with the task force as far as postage stamp rates for transmission, and I don't think that this is with regards to transmission. So, you know, in many jurisdictions, there's more of a postage stamp rate for transmission where there's less pancaking between utility wheelings so that you can deliver electricity. So is this just for... because this is under maintained residential subsidy focused on equity while reducing needs across communities, which I'm a little unclear. So I'm just asking for some clarity on whoever drafted this comment on 6.3, what they were meaning by it.
Yeah.
Or is it both? Is it postage stamp rate as a rate, and is it a postage stamp rate for transmission? I don't know.
I don't know about transmission. I think what we're talking about here, I want to say there's a... one of the presenters over the course of this period brought up postage stamp rates. But I think the idea, as I understand it, is really that everybody pays the same price per kilowatt hour in every community in Alaska. And by doing so, you know, one, you're not worried so much about PCE anymore, but you're tying any investment into projects. And, you know, as Andrew and others have, you know, no matter where it occurs, if we're lowering the rate in any community, we're lowering the rate for all Alaskans in direct ways. So I think that's what it's talking about. It's, you know, modeled elsewhere. It's not, I mean, I don't know that we're suggesting this is, you know, we talked about political feasibility. I mean, there's a ton more work that would have to go into any concept like this. And lots of pros and cons to work through. Again, our job was to let 1,000 flowers bloom. Is that what it is? So this was one of the topics that emerged over the course of our discussions.
Roger, is there any appetite? I know the Rail Belt's talked about this, and there's been suits and other things. I mean, I'll just give you the example. Cherry Wind Farm came up with like a 6-cent rate plus. And by the time it got to Golden Valley, it was reported in the paper that based on the transmission pancakes, it was over 20 cents. Is there any gumption or thought of lowering the cost of power by allowing a more of a postage stamp rate for transmission or diving into that consideration? Because it seems to me that that's an impediment.
This is John Sim. So NSTAR's rates are postage stamp rates. So whether you're in Homer or, you know, all the rest far north as Houston, Big Lake area, that's postage stamp rates. I think there are definitely ways you can make that work. There are challenges around it, but, the hardest thing is getting it going. And then once you do, it can work. So I think that's something to be looked at. I think, it alleviates a lot of the challenges that we're talking about today, from, you know, trying to incentivize or subsidize specific projects or other types of things. But I do think there needs to be some ring collaring around it, because the one thing you don't want is, you know, one utility or one region being able to drive up the cost so that the subsidization of everyone else's rates go up to increase. So you could have it be performance-based, for example, as long as there's certain maintenance going on. But yeah, I think it's definitely worth a longer conversation, and it's something that we do on our system. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
this is Curtis. One of the things in the Riggle book that we are looking at, and that is looking at, I would say, a consolidation, or looking at the various owners of the transmission line and how that can be better structured, because there are various rates for moving power. Obviously, MEA won't pay as much for Bradley Power as much as Golden Valley does going through the GIS system and things like that. So we are trying to look at ways to, I would say, create a pancake rate or one rate, one postage stamp rate across the transmission lines. And that's one of the things that we're targeting and doing a paper on to try to tackle just what you were indicating. At least on the transmission side.
So you're saying that would be a postage stamp wheeling rate, or is that a postage stamp integration?
First thing we have to do is get the consolidation, because right now we have 5 owners of 600 miles of transmission line, and different ones charge different amounts. Everything has to go through the GIS system, and so for them, it's a higher cost on their transmission side. Golden Valley is just moving power for themselves. And so that's one of the things we're looking for, so let's figure out the consolidation, and then do we put a postage stamp rate on? How does that look like if you get the consolidation of the five transmission owners?
And Curtis, do you think that falls underneath this committee, or is it more focused on another committee? Because I think the wisdom and the nugget of knowledge there of where this needs to go needs to be captured in the overall plan.
Well, we're looking at it from the rail belt side of it, because it's a rail belt issue as far as the transmission system and the owners of the transmission system. And so we were tackling it from that point. But again, I think overall, and maybe we can have this conversation, but when we put this together, there's going to be some overarching, but then broken out by subcommittee. And so we're not going to lose anything if it's in one subcommittee versus another. I think it's still an important part of it by region of the state.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Right. I think ultimately what we wanted to get to with this, and I can add in separately transmission postage stamp, right? But with this one, we want, if any incentive or investment that's made into any single community, to benefit all Alaskans. And it really starts to solve some of the equity and fairness questions, and gets to some of the challenges, Andrew, you brought up related to PCE. Like, it's not enough. It doesn't actually bring parity. A postage stamp rate does, but to John's point, you really got to work through, any solving for bad behavior, freeloading, those kinds of things, and have performance metrics around how to overall make sure that everybody's contributing toward that effort. I think we've got just 15 minutes or so more. So we probably get into some of the work that the statutes and regulatory subcommittee did, but there were enough things that came up that we wanted to make sure we captured them. So this is looking at state policy facts and other incentives, and something of a softer approach. But looking at, where are their resources? We talked about, exemptions at state and local level, an energy plan so surprising overall. And then I think this, energy incentives program study, I think was probably an initial recommendation that we had around wanting more data to support, the discussions that we were having. So any questions on that?
Well, I would just add, Nils, you and me have a difference on it, but then we come from different worlds. But the encouraged municipal is aspirational, where I'm looking at from moving the needle is directional on 8.6, where we implement a state exemption on municipal property tax, which is in the authority of the state to do so. Whether it's politically correct or whether it will get through is another question, but if a municipality isn't currently collecting tax on something that doesn't exist, they're losing nothing, and it may be a way of encouraging private investment in new generation and transmission. If you have a co-op, it's already nonprofit, but if we bring in an XYZ corporation that wants to invest $2 billion in new transmission in Alaska, and then all of a sudden they're hit up with 5 cents of property tax, it would be discouraging. And so other states use their state authority to look at that for those specific purposes under 8.6.
Yeah. Other states reimburse for those exemptions too. So maybe that's part of the discussion is that.
I think it's a statewide. My point is, I think it's a statewide or a state level discussion that we should be talking about as an incentive or subsidy, as opposed to letting it up to particular boroughs or municipalities. But right. Whether they get reimbursed for it or not, that's another question.
Yeah. I do like. I don't know that this solves for it, but when we're talking about. And clean energy and transmission line land use designations on state and federal lands, like, you know, those regions where we're really focused on, you know, what we want to achieve, that might be a good place to take some of those exemption questions, where we're really focused and prioritized around, I don't know, about principal energy zones, but really that's where we're trying to make the most difference for the most number of people, maybe. But tying it back to overall goals of the task force would be good.
Jen Miller. I just have some experience in this space. We actually worked with the Kenai Peninsula Borough on a property tax exemption for independent power producer projects, just to try and level the cost between a co-op built generation project and an IPP project. And one thing that is, and we were, the Kansas Liberal ultimately supported that, but one thing that I would say was tricky in that process is you're going to the borough and asking them to forego future revenue, and it's not, that's a tough ask at that borough level, and establishing it at the state level would help, rather than having to wait for those policies to disseminate through the different boroughs, having it established at the state level would accelerate that policy and allow projects to move forward. And there were some nuances that got it added into that policy at the very last meeting that actually make it difficult to use. And so having a state policy where the mechanics work well could, you know, rather than each borough having a different policy, just a lot of ways that across the state could be useful. So just want to offer that up.
Thanks. Tom, a quick question. Would you mind bringing that back up, please? I'd like to ask a question about 1.4.
Did I linger too long on one? You had a chance to read it, actually? Yes.
Well, so we also discussed this in our Rail Belt Committee. And at 1.4, it says, ensure the criteria for state and federal project investments are weighted towards affordability goals. So in talking about the rail belt, and I would think this is applicable to the rest of Alaska, we want to ensure that there's diversification of power generation. And an example for this is, let's say the state is successful in AKLNG, which means that it's now bringing cheap gas to the state of Alaska. Does that mean that because it's cheaper that we would not want to go down the renewable path for other power generation? That I have concern with that language, because I think a long-term goal of the state should be diversification of energy supply that is affordable, local, and reliable. And so that, I've always been worried about that affordability priority, because I think that can hurt long-term aspirations for where the state wants to be.
Yeah. But it's, I mean, I don't have a good answer for you, except to say that for our subcommittee, the first conversation we have is kind of what is the lens that we're going to be looking at all of these recommendations. And it was entirely focused on what lowers the cost of energy in Alaska. And I know that the surveying work that we've done around how to further identify reliability and resilience expands upon that, and there might be other goals. But that was just how the subcommittee kind of evaluated or focused on its incentives and subsidies actions.
So
We also talked about short versus long term, and that might be where those kinds of decisions, you might have low cost LNG, for instance, come in early, but what are the long term aspects? So thank you.
Yeah, I could see, let's say we made a recommendation at the task force that was going to be a new checkbox for ensuring that the state made investments, and there are going to be all kinds of groups that say, I'm cheaper.
Right.
You can't go forward with that one.
Right.
So, again, the letters and the words are very important here. I just want to make sure that we're considerate of that when we're thinking about the long-term vision that we want the state to be.
I think you bring up a good point, John, and I think Mills and Isaac, you know, the chairs can, this is the first word smithing, but I think your point on the record, I support that you have to look at, yes, we want to get 10 cent power, and that's what we're focusing on, clearly, but, you know, the resiliency factor and, you know, locally produced and the reliability, they're all important. So you don't want to throw one out and say, oh, we're just locking in the one and not taking into consideration those other factors. So I think you make a good point.
Isaac, we did not do any of the work we were supposed to do during this. but we also did really good work. I really appreciate everybody's good feedback on this. It sounds like Isaac, we do have work to do to wordsmith, to evaluate the actions that are in there right now and take into account the input that we received this afternoon. I know we've got some goals to get this further developed in a format for getting it back to the co-chairs of the task force earlier, I think it's the next week. So we can do that, and maybe I can follow up and email Isaac and we can parse out assignments and stuff. I know you've already done a lot of writing, so I think for some of these, we can just bring your writing almost directly into this format. So we should be on a good path. Maria? You still?
Yeah, hi, I'm still here.
Hi. Was there, I'm sure we missed things. Anything that you want to flag for Isaac and I to make sure we're on task in the coming week?
No, you said you're going to coordinate, you know, who does what and assignment-wise, so I think that's the big thing there, but we'll make sure that the documents are updated on our end on the tracking sheet, and yeah, feel free to reach out to us, too, if we can help at all or anything like that.
Well, you're on this deal. Do you want to apply anything else to the rail belt? You got a lot of tasks.
I was going to say, half the work is going to be done by the rail belt. thanks, everybody.
Well, thanks, Jeff. Thanks to the rail belt and Andrew for all your input. It's very helpful to get that perspective. So, yeah. Some clarity around some items. Thank you. Anything else, Nils?
I guess we can adjourn our incentives and subsidies subcommittee and turn things back over to the task force. Is that right?
Sounds good. Yep.
So we got 10-minute break, though. Thanks, everybody.
Okay. 240.